Turn that around.
The attendant.
I need to remind you that we meet this week, and then next Tuesday, and the following Tuesday, and that's it. That last Tuesday, 2 weeks from today, am I right? 2 weeks from today?
Right.
Today's the 10th, 14th, 3 weeks from today. Right, so 3 weeks from today, the papers are due, so you should be in the middle of working on it. If you want to get it to me earlier, my toe. Given that we only have three more times really to speak, we're going to have to accelerate history a little bit. Every couple of hundred years we're doing that. So we've been somewhere around the 1880s. And where we need to go today is at least up until World War I. And I just heard a tape from someone, from Rabbi Kessin, whose article on the Ramchal I quoted here some time ago. And in the tape, he speaks about something that Ramchal writes about one of his works on Kabbalah, and that is that the process of Geula accelerates very, very much the closer you get to the Geula. So that events that, or processes that used to take a couple of hundred years, the beginning of Jewish history, start to take only 50 years, and then 20 years, and then months, and then days, and then hours. Perhaps it helps explain even some things we see in our own time, about wars that used to take years, now take hours, governments that used to fall over centuries, now fall in days. As we get closer and closer to the Geula, certain kinds of processes accelerate. Part of that can be explained naturally in terms of technology and communications, but you know, we know that natural explanations are just superficial. When we were left off somewhere, I don't remember exactly where we came, but I'm trying to pull together things that are happening in different places. We're somewhere in the 1880s. Some of the major events that are happening in the 1880s that are affecting the global picture of Jewish history are a number of things. Number one, the mass movement of Jews to the United States, which is a tremendous and really in many ways unprecedented type of phenomenon. Hundreds and hundreds of thousands of Jews are moving from Eastern Europe to the United States. Which is a fact, and the implications of the fact will begin to become more and more apparent as we start talking about from the 1880s until this very minute. Another thing that's happening in the 1880s, again accelerating but slowly accelerating, and that is the slow return of Jews to Eretz Yisrael. We've been tracking that since 1492. But then we were speaking about Mama Shechidah, really individual 10, 12, 15 people, this one, that one. The whole community of Tzvach that we spoke about was maybe 20 families. There were some very important people in those families, but still, in terms of numbers, very little. And we spoke about the Vilna Gaon Talmidim and the Baal Shem Tov Talmidim returning to Eretz Yisrael. But in the 1880s, we're starting to have people come by the hundreds. And around this time, we're starting to see the beginning of political Zionism. We spoke a little bit about Herzl. That's a whole other front that events are happening. On the front that we've been emphasizing here in this course, which is Torah as a historical force. So in the 1880s, a number of things are happening. The growth of the yeshivos in Europe? Of the 1880s, Volozhin is at its height. And there are other yeshivas that did that general area of Europe. Tells Mir, countless other yeshivas. Hasidus has, by the 1880s, taken complete control in terms of the majority of Jews in Poland and Galicia and perhaps the Ukraine and areas of Russia are under the sway of Hasidism. And the major courts, the major dynasties of Hasidus have become established. And all of this is besides what is happening within the Sephardic world, which, as I explained to you, unfortunately, in three books don't tell you too much about, and I personally don't know too much about, but there are things happening there too, which kids can't ignore. So, there's a lot of dynamic movement happening in Jewish history, in on the Jewish scene, all over the place. I'd like to focus for a moment on, again, on Torah as a historical force, especially on the Torah centers of that time, which were in Poland and Lithuania, and typified by the yeshiva in Volozhin. In the time, the yeshiva of Volozhin, which has been in existence now 75 years or so, becomes the main intellectual center for people who will become, in the next 100 years or so, the most shaping intellect in the Torah world. The brightest young men are attracted to Volozhin. And among them are people who eventually will become Gedolei Torah, but among them also are people who will eventually become political leaders and the shapers of other aspects of Jewish culture, non-Torah aspects of Jewish culture, like poetry and Hebrew literature. Some of the names, of course, are people like Rabbi Zalman Meltzer, who was the father-in-law and teacher of Avraham Kotler, who had a tremendous impact. Bialtov and Slabodka spent some time in Volozhin. Rav Kook was a student in Volozhin. All this in the 1880s. These are just some of the Gedolei Torah who had an ongoing impact. Baruch Fair. Also of Volozhin at this time are people like Chaim Nachman Bialik, who eventually became the most important force in modern Hebrew literature, not only because of his poetic skill and his writing skill, but because of the force of his personality and his influence on other maskilim who took the Haskalah to a different place. We'll talk a little bit about it, a different place than it had been until now. Until this point, Haskalah is a negative force in the sense that it identifies itself as being anti. Alright? Many movements start by being anti something. Haskalah at one point was anti-tradition, anti-old-fashioned, anti-the-Torah as representing reactionary process. At this time, Haskalah begins to become for something else. For an enlightenment, for Zionism, for accomplishing an educational system. It begins to become a force that's not just destructive, but constructive. I'm not speaking constructive from a value point of view, but constructive in the attempts to build. And also in Volozhin at this time are men who are destined to become the political leaders, or at least the ideological political leaders of political Zionism. People, as to mention some names, people like Joseph Klausner, who become the thinkers of political Zionism. And all these people are in Volozhin at the same time. Some of them I was spending more time learning, and some of them spending less time learning Torah. But they're all there at the same time, and they happen to have an influence on each other. No way that people could be attending the same yeshiva, Volozhin at its height, at maybe 300 or 400 Talmidim. So it was not, by today's standards, it's not that big of a yeshiva. People knew each other and influenced each other. It's a fascinating book that was written by this Dr. Yosef Klausner called Toldos Neis Tziona Kvalojma. Little book that I have in which he describes that within the yeshiva of Valojin there was a group that called themselves Neis Tziona, the banner of Tzion, leg of Tzion. And these were young men who were thinking of Zionism as a way of achieving it, something in reality, something political, not just something religious and spiritual. And this was a very active group within Valojin, and had, to some extent, the support of the Netziv, who was the Rosh Yeshiva of Valojin then. The Netziv's basic opposition to it came about because he was afraid that this was politically dangerous, because after all, Valojin was in Russia, Tsarist Russia, and Tsarist Russia was against any political movement, and it endangered the physical well-being of his Talmidim. But in many ways, the Netziv supported the idea of Neis Tziona. This is what Dr. Klausner argues in his book. If you study the Netziv's writing, you see that the Netziv had a very powerful Ahavas Tzion, and also foresaw that there would be a return to Tzion and push for it. And the Rav Baruch Epstein, who was nephew of Netziv, and who wrote his memoirs, three-volume memoirs called Makor Baruch, also supports this view of Netziv. You probably know, in recent times, in the past couple of years, parts of that book were translated by the Art Scroll as My Uncle's Netziv. And in certain circles, it was felt that this is a terrible book, it can't be true, you can't picture the Netziv as being so much pro-Tzion as he described in the Torah Tzemima, by the author of the Torah Tzemima. There's a book, there's an article recently in one of the journals that are out there that I have a copy of, I'll try to bring it in next week, by Rabbi Schachter, the rabbi in Manhattan now, historian by profession, and he's researched very thoroughly all the documents about this time in history, and to support the view, of course, which is the Torah Tamima's view, and the Torah Tamima was there, that Netziv was not against, to say the least, was not against the Zionist activity that was taking place in his yeshiva at this time. I'm mentioning this because as we move ahead in looking at the reaction within the Torah camp towards political Zionism, it's important to stress that at this period of time that we're focusing on right now, in the 1880s, there was support, at least in certain circles, for Zionist political activity by the Gedolei Torah. Netziv being one example of this. But I want to say something else about Netziv's contribution, because I think Netziv, because of his influence on his students and his influence on us down to today, is one of these pivotal people that I've been trying to identify as we move along through Jewish history. Besides his view, which again is debatable, about political Zionism, Netziv had a few other very important things to say. Netziv, I need to stress here, Netziv had a Derech HaLimud, which was very, very well defined, and was in many ways different from the Derech HaLimud of some of his predecessors. Netziv, first of all, the Derech HaLimud in Valojin, under Netziv, was to learn Shas. Netziv's Derech HaLimud that he established in Valojin, this Derech HaLimud in Valojin, was to learn Maseches Brachos, then Maseches Shabbos, then Maseches Erevin, then Maseches Tzachim, etc., all the way down to Maseches Nida, and then start off Shas all over again. The currently popular style in the yeshivos, which in some ways are offspring of Valojin, of course, is to identify 5, 6, 8 Maseches and to learn them in some type of cycle. But that was not an Nitziv's approach. And that was not what the way Voloshin was organized. Voloshin was organized to study Shas in order. And one of the riots of this, and this is a historical fact, but the way we see it till today, Nitziv Sefer on Shas, Merome Sodeh, which is basically his shiurim in the yeshiva, Nitziv's Kedushim on Shas are not just on Bava Kama or Ksuvis, I mean, they're on Shas. They're on Zeroim as well as Kodshim and Taharet, as well as Noshim and Nazik. But more than that, the Nitziv felt that there's a lot more that has to be learned besides Shabbos. And he felt, for example, that it was important for